Yes, it's our bonus Q&A episode of Books of the Year, another podcast from us. Robert Harris is here. His new book is called Precipice. You can hear him talking all about that in our companion podcast. Look out for that if you haven't heard it already. Robert, the first question is the same as when you answered it the last time, but you'll have read a few books since then. What is the last book that you really, really enjoyed reading?
Well, the most recent I really enjoyed was Craig Brown's Voyage Round the Queen, a kind of very unconventional, a rather brilliant way of writing about Queen Elizabeth II, just through people who met her and what people wrote about her. And because there's a sort of central enigma about her personality, and this method that he employs is fascinating. And you know, she remains an enigma at the end of it, which is, some might say, a cop-out, but I thought was rather brilliant. I'm not sure she even knew herself who she was particularly.
Funny?
It's very funny. Craig's a very funny writer. And, you know, that was I was on a book tour, and that was a companion for a couple of weeks. You know, I look forward to getting back to my lonely hotel room and getting back to it.
Have you ever met any of your author heroes, the people you've looked up to? Have you ever managed to meet any of them?
I suppose the one I met a lot, who was a hero of mine, was John le Carré, David Cornwell. I got to know him pretty well and spent time, and was indeed at one point supposed to be his official biographer. I'm not sure that hero worship survives
contact
being a potential biographer. I still think he wrote two of the greatest post-war novels, A Spy Who Came In From the Cold, and in particular Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. And he was a fascinating man to talk to, a really, really remarkable figure, but quite manipulative and really like his characters, really. Do I want to say devious? I would say you could never get to the bottom of him, actually. But I did get to know him pretty well, and he used to send me signed copies of his latest books.
This is a question about adaptation, and many of your books have been turned into TV shows and movies, and I think Conclave is on the way. I saw you tweeted. You're still on Twitter, I noticed, so that's rarely, but you're there. Or X, but you I think you tweeted the poster for Conclave, which is very exciting because we love that book, and that was I love the fact that you just love elections, whatever it's for.
That's the ultimate. That's the World Cup of elections is a papal conclave.
Do you have? Actually, I want to ask you about that. But do you have any favourite screen adaptations, not of your work, but of other people's works?
Oh,
let's
not
do it two pronged. Let's do it two pronged. One, someone else's, and two, of yours.
Okay. Well, it's a bit of a cliche to say this, but I would say the best adaptation of a book is The Godfather, both parts one and two, which are pretty faithful to the book. And Mario Puzo collaborated on the writing of the screenplays. Those are stunning, I think, and I think those two films, I've watched them every 3 or 4 years, you know, because they're just so brilliantly done. They kind of combine great political and psychological insight with, at the same time, being utterly believable and incredibly exciting. So I think that they are standalones. Of my own, putting aside the adaptations that I wrote myself, The Ghost and An Officer and a Spy, I think the new one coming, Conclave, is in a league of its own as adaptations of my books.
Because?
Well, the script is pretty faithful to the novel, its twists and turns and characters, but at the same time, it's so beautifully directed and acted that it does... You know, it's a really stunning work of art in its own right. I think it's absolutely great, and I'm so pleased it's been done. I mean,
Ray Fiennes is
it's one of those miracles, you know, because it's had various actors attached to it, various directors attached to it, and then the kind of fruit machine stopped with kind of three bells or whatever it is that wins you the jackpot. And we got Edward Berger to direct it, who'd just done All Quiet on the Western Front. He signed up to do it before he became famous for that film. And we had this amazing cast, Ralph Fiennes, Stanley Tucci, wow. John Lithgow, Isabella Rossellini. So it's an absolutely terrific cast, and a very, very good screenplay by Peter Strawn, who you perhaps saw the Gary Oldman Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Wow. He adapted that. So, you know, it's just one of those rare occasions where the stars aligned.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to that very much.
Superb. Another two-prong question, as far as, are you a completist when it comes to reading? By which I mean two things. One is, every book you start, do you finish? And any author who you like, do you always pick up whatever they've read, whatever they've written next, you are, I'm in every time?
I'm an anti-completist, actually. I often discard books. Especially novels, actually. I get to the bottom. I read a novel, reviews of a novel that's been very highly praised, and I read to about the bottom of page one over onto page two, and I realise, I flip to the author's biography and realise they've taken creative writing course somewhere, and this book has been written to in order to be read aloud to various other people who've been on creative writing courses. And although it's the prose is, as it were, faultless, somehow it doesn't feel real. And so I've given up quite a lot of highly praised modern novels. This is, let me hasten to add, I'm perfectly willing to accept, is a fault of mine and not of the authors. But yes, I often give up on books that have been strongly recommended and turn out did not deliver. I don't know anymore. Years ago, I used to always buy everything that came out from people like Martin Amis and Ian McEwan and Julian Barnes. I kind of sort of stopped doing that about 20 years ago. Again, more the fault is mine, I think, than theirs. Once I became a novelist myself, I tended to read more non-fiction. I think that reading novels, I was either irritated by them because they were so good, or irritated because they weren't. So I was sort of in a bit of a cleft stick there.
We always like to surprise our guests with a question from a fellow author and fan. So if you put those headphones on, Robert, we have a voice note from author and QI elf Andrew Hunter Murray.
Hi, Simon. Hi, Matt. And hello, Robert. As you know, I'm a huge fan. I loved Precipice. And what I'd like to know is, I think this is the fifth of your books that deals either with the First or the Second World War. And you tend to avoid the action of the battlefield in favor of events at the beginning of the war, at the end, the politics behind the scenes. Is there a reason that you do that? And also, what is the reason that you keep being drawn back to this period in history?
That's it.
Well, yeah, I accept that. I mean, I'm a political writer, and so essentially, I mean, I know everyone's a thriller writer, but I would think probably a political writer would be a more accurate description. And once it transfers to soldiers and the battlefield, that's a different sort of a book. I'm fascinated by the interplay of politicians and power and the way all that pans out, and the business of meetings. I mean, meetings can be incredibly dramatic. Recently on television, Line of Duty, the meetings are some of the best parts, the interplay of the meetings. And Le Carré was also very good on meetings. So I quite like the drama of that rather than, you know, the plane, you know, strafing the enemy submarine or whatever. And why do I go to these periods? Well, I think there's nothing bigger has ever happened, really, than the Second World War. We live in its shadow. I was born 12 years after the end of it. And at the time, that seemed a long while. But now, as I'm older, that's only as long ago as 2012, say, the Olympics, the London Olympics. That's how far away the war was from where I was born. So I grew up in its shadow very much. And I've kind of been working through an obsession with that, I think, all my life ever since. And going back to 1914, to Precipice, that is really like when the whole thing kicks off. And so, I mean, I may not write another book set in either period. I think perhaps I've exhausted it now. I'm 67. I don't have that many books left. I've done 16 novels. I'm not going to write another 16, I fear.
I think you might do.
Yes.
I think you just have to
say with a weariness.
No.
But well, we're still going to be here when we're in our 90s.
I don't see why not.
No.
If you still have the skill, if you still have the contacts, if you still have the desire, Robert.
I certainly have the desire to do it, yes. And as you get older, I think that cunning starts to replace energy.
Good, good. If you were to go back to university, what would you study? I don't know what you did first time round.
I did English the first time round, which I'm glad that I did, not least because I could do so many other things. English being, at least when I was there, a relatively simple, easy degree. History, though, I probably would do because I enjoy it. And I'm not a trained historian, although I like working in archives and I've sort of, I hope, taught myself some of the rudiments of it, but I'd quite like to study it. Study periods that I might not otherwise go to.
Like which ones? I was about to ask. Which ones?
Well, maybe the early medieval period. I'm very ignorant about all that, King Alfred and that sort of time. But, you know, any period would be fascinating. I mean, I've really enjoyed writing novels set in kind of like the last one set in the 17th century. I never thought I'd write a book set there then, for instance.
Is there anything that you have learnt over the course of writing all of the books that you just mentioned, which makes writing the next one easier?
Only the fact that you've done it before. I mean, I think when you're starting out, it seems a trackless desert ahead of you. And at least I can kind of, when things are going badly, look up at a shelf of books and think, well, I've done it 16 times before. Hopefully I can do it again. I've learned a few things. One is never to think anything you've done that day is either incredibly good or incredibly bad, because you're not necessarily the best judge of your own work, and often you'll find that it's just pretty much the same as it's always been, whether for good or ill. I think that that's a lesson that I've very much learned. I've learned not to throw anything away, because quite often it comes in later very usefully. And there's a wonderful phrase of Philip Ross. He said, learn to be patient with your own crap. Go back to it the next day and make it better. And I think patience, actually, and application are boring words, but I think they're all important.
Have you ever tried to impress someone with a book?
No, I don't think so. What, sort of carry around Proust and the original French?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You were an English student, you might have done that.
No, I don't think so. There are books that I've occasionally got very, very enthusiastic about and have showered people with copies, and I've with the result of a deafening silence. But no, I don't think I've sort of carried anything around or tried to show off to someone by claiming a great love of a book that I didn't really enjoy.
Finally, you are throwing a fantasy dinner party and you can invite three authors, living or dead. Who's coming?
Well, I certainly wouldn't invite a living author. That would be very irritating. Well, I was once on a programme and they didn't pay a fee for going on this programme, but they did give you a little goodie bag at the end of it. And one of the things was a very small, very blank notebook with authors I met and liked printed on the cover. This is, I'm joking, really. But I think I would choose, if I've got the opportunity to do it, I'd probably choose people who have passed away. And there were three men, I think all born in the same year, all born in 1903, if you can guess who I'm going to say, all British. And they were Evelyn Waugh, George Orwell and Graham Greene. And Waugh knew Orwell and he knew Greene, but I don't think Green knew Orwell. But they are the three writers I suppose I most admire: their prose style, their engagement with the world, their books survive because there's something about them, some quality about them that makes them interesting. And it would just be fascinating to gather them all together.
Do you think they get on?
Well, I certainly got on oddly enough with Orwell. When Orwell was in a sanatorium at Stroud in Gloucestershire, Waugh lived nearby and he visited him twice. And Orwell gave him a copy of 1984 before it was published. And War was quite rude about it, actually, to him. But there was a kind of brilliant honesty about his remarks about it. And I think that they would have got on. And War certainly got on with Green as a fellow Catholic.
Robert House, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed. Precipice is out now. You can hear Robert talking about Precipice in our other podcast. If you want to get in touch, you can email at any time, booksoftheyear@yahoo.com or via the socials. Be back next week with best-selling crime writer Ian Rankin. Hope you can join us then.